Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You have no idea how bad it gets.
Sally, I think I'll buy the flowers myself.
But you're not a girl, you're a guy. And why would a guy want to marry a guy?
Don't stomp your little last season Prada shoes at me, honey.
John Calio, will you go around with me?
Don't fuck with me, fellas!
Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty, I can't stand it anymore.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a crumb?
I had a hunch you might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you didn't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is Brokeback Mountain.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are celebrating films that are fat and fabulous. Our guest is filmmaker and radical body politics activist Kelly Jean Drinkwater, who has produced this wonderful new documentary called Nothing to Lose, which is screening as part of the Queer Screen Film Fest next month. So we're chatting with Drinkwater about her new documentary and also about how films represent larger people in general. So we know that representation matters and that seeing ourselves on screen is really important. So the question then is why there are so few larger bodies on the screen. And this is something that we're going to try to unpack over the course of tonight's program.
And that's right. And we have a disclaimer tonight as well. So when we are talking about the word fat in our conversation, it is very, very much a neutral term, and there's no judgment applied to that. This is just simply a word that we are using in the context of our discussion today.
Well, that's it. Fat has become a word that is very value-laden, and the bodies that we see on the screen are just as value-laden. Everything we see on our screens is constructed. So we really have to ask questions about why we're seeing what we're seeing and why it is that all of the protagonists in nearly every film that we love look a particular way and don't look a particular way.
It was funny when we were kind of doing the homework and looking at other films that we can relate to this great little documentary. We kept coming over the same tropes of characters, you know, in films where they are the butt of a joke, they are there for comic relief, they're never the hero in a film. And we're not talking just queer film, we're talking all films. And it was really hard to find anywhere, you know, the larger person isn't being fat shamed in the film.
And this is something we've come across on the program before when we were talking to David Halperin about what camp is and the way camp is depicted, when we were talking to Peter Lehman about men's bodies on the screen. Both writers kind of reduced representation to this kind of dichotomy where on the one hand we have a certain type of person who is always the joke, camp for David Halperin, and on the other side we have a certain type of body that is always kind of associated with potency, and for Peter Lehman that was the representation of kind of virility and masculine virility. So there's always this kind of dichotomy, and we have to ask why it is that larger people are simply never represented in these kind of powerful roles. I also had a look at a number of different films, and I went to Rotten Tomatoes for instance, which is a critics aggregator site, and Rotten Tomatoes has a list of the top 150 queer films, and I went through the list because I thought it would be an interesting exercise to see how many films feature
larger body people.
How many do you think out of the top 150?
Daniel, I did the same thing.
Did you?
I did it with lesbian films because, you know, I'm always trying to find positive lesbian films, and I could only think of one character in one film that I knew, but found none.
Well, this list of 150 films, if I was generous, I could come up with four films out of 150 that had a larger character in it. And we're not talking about large characters.
Obese, yeah.
We're talking about camp, for instance, Tiffany Taylor, who I don't think is fat.
No,
definitely not.
The Birdcage, Nathan Lane, who again is just...
No.
But that, so these are the kind of films with larger people, and that constitutes just 2.6% of the top 150 reviewed queer films. So when we're talking...
So sorry, Daniel. So you're really talking about this whole idea of straight, thin, and gay fat. in terms of Nathan Lane in Birdcage. So Nathan Lane would, most people would probably say in the straight community, say, oh, listen, he's not fat. He's thin. But in the gay community, he's fat.
Well, even the dad in Modern Family very much as well.
Yeah. Oh, so we're talking about Cameron.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in we have talked about this before, Alan, about this idea of body image in the gay community and the way that that is dealt with in cinema. We spoke with the director of Dreamboat at the time. We looked at representation in Moonlight, for instance, which does a lot to show how masculinity is associated with the body.
Yeah.
But here we're looking at, I think, a slightly different phenomena. So this is, you know, this is really about society choosing to marginalize different types of bodies and reify a certain way of being as normal. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think a discussion about the way that bodies are kind of represented on the screen is really actually quite pertinent to our, you know, perennial inquiry about queer representation, because this is about the marginalization of certain ways of being to kind of reify a mainstream normal way of being, which is completely constructed. Doesn't need to be that way.
But you go back even to children's cinema, and it was funny, I was looking at some of my favourite film titles. Goonies is one of my all-time favourite films. Again, the larger kid, Chunk, that's his name, is always eating candy bars. He's the butt of the joke. He is kind of the hero, but not really in the film when he kind of saves the day. So but we're even doing this in children's cinema, so we're teaching our children from a young age, this is acceptable. Chunk is the butt of the joke, has to wiggle his tummy to get in, is teased by. So we're already setting these images and for our kids.
And Hollywood, you know, when we talk about film, we talk about a global industry. Hollywood is obviously the kind of at the kind of apex of that industry. But Hollywood has a bad history of really shaming larger bodies. Take a listen to this, for instance, from the 2006 film with Adam Sandler, Click.
Look at juicy titties!
What is that? Oh, God, no!
Now, I questioned whether we should, in fact, actually play that clip because I think it's just so bad. But this is an example of how Hollywood associates larger bodies with this kind of slapstick
humor. They make the fat suit. I mean, you were talking about Shallow Hal earlier.
Yeah.
Austin Powers, and apologies, Fat Bastard, that's one of the characters. I mean, it is, we're filled with these films.
And the idea is that being fat is just something, is just
grotesque.
Disrobe yourself off if you so choose.
Yeah.
If I can, I think there are two conversations here, because I think on the one hand, there will be people who say, well, these are just comedies, you know, we're taking the mickey, we're taking the piss. This is not, you know, this is not what we really think. I think what's more insidious, what's even worse is, you know, when we look at those films which gross the most, when we look at the top 100 films of the year, when we look at the top 150 queer films of all time, and there simply aren't any larger bodies, that's what's more insidious, because this isn't a conscious attempt to take down someone who's large. This is the way that Hollywood reifies norms, and the way that Hollywood teaches us that we need to be.
So you're either invisible with zero representation at all.
It's the invisibility that's the worst.
It's invisibility. Or when there are fat characters, they are legitimizing and normalizing to a certain extent fat phobia.
Yeah. Well, fat shaming.
As this example from Mean Girls, I think, shows perfectly.
Regina? We have to talk to you.
Is butter a carb?
Yes. Gina, you're wearing sweatpants.
Sweatpants are all that fits me right now. Fine. You can walk home, bitches. That's where you're going, fat ass.
I mean, there you have it. Not only is it not positive representation, it's actually one that actively encourages fat phobia.
And shaming.
And fat shame, yeah. I mean, it's appalling, isn't it? Just imagine if that had have been a queer character, a gay character. I mean, we do get that in some films today, but that's we're seeing that less and less and less.
And this
yet,
is a...
Yet this is not happening for fat people.
Well, it's a long-standing trope, this kind
it
of...
It is. And that's where Rebel Wilson in Pitch Perfect is slightly...
She's come under fire, a lot
She's
of
come
fire.
Under fire for it, but it's still a character that is embracing... Her size and sexual. I love that she does,
embrace
it.
She does embrace her sexuality.
She embraces her sexuality, but the same jokes are still made about food, about weight, and but it's almost kind of breaking that mold. Not there totally.
Well, tonight we are looking at some films that actually do break the mold, that actually, whether successfully or not, attempt to say something about body positivity and affirming all different types of bodies. And we really had to look far and wide for these films because there simply aren't that many of them.
Well, we want to hear from you as well. Have we missed any films? Are there any characters that are heroes and heroines in these films that don't fit that size zero model, you know, of every other kind of Hollywood blockbuster? Message in 0427 Joy 949. Email us on air at joy.org.au.
For me, the film that comes to mind, the film that deals with body positivity, and that might be a stretch, but different size bodies in the most kind of authentic and poignant way, I think, is a film called Yossi, which is a 2012 film from Eitan Fox. It's an Israeli film. It stars Ohad Knolna, who's reprising the role that he played in Yossi and Jager, the film which
Gorgeous
came before
film.
This. But this film is just so much more powerful, I think. It deals with, obviously, in Yossi and Jager, spoiler alert, he loses his partner. And in this film, he's still grappling with that loss, but he's also...
10 years later. About 10 years later, yeah.
He is also grappling with his body shape because he has put on weight. Mm-hmm. And we see him kind of... diminished within the gay community for his shape, and we see his emotional struggle in and the journey that he goes on in accepting his own body.
I would say you'd have to go beyond being diminished. I mean, it was an active isolation in a sense here. So the question for me is,
but it feels authentic. That does go on in the gay community.
You know, he isolated himself, but also isolated by the community, and as a result, he sort of fell into this depression.
It's a really heartbreaking film. I think it ends with a kind of affirmation. We have a sense that perhaps there might be some more hope in the future for this character, but it is a really beautiful and powerful film.
Daniel, can you refresh my memory in that sense? At the end of the film, which I don't remember terribly
no,
well.
No, he's bringing me the DVD next
at
week.
At the end of going with
don't
this.
Spoil it.
No, I just want to know, was the sense of him actually... I guess moving on to bigger and better things, a result of him losing weight, or was it a case of?
Oh, you're not going where I thought you'd be going.
No, I'm not.
I thought he was going to go there too. Hang on.
Well, the surprise, surprise. Sometimes there is a serious thought that goes on in his head. Not often.
No, it's not. It's not
credit.
About him. There is a whole genre of films out there about character, you know, think as recently as I Feel Pretty about characters kind of changing their body shape and will this bring them happiness? That's not what this film is about.
No.
This film is about
the end of it.
That's finding, I suppose Yossi, the title character of this film, finds validation externally, but finds a way to kind of take that external validation and validate himself. And there is a sense that he is doing that with the help of some people that he meets throughout the film.
Yeah.
And that
so it's hopefully not a Mirror Has Two Faces moment where Barbara Streisand has to lose all that weight. Is that?
No, nothing like
oh,
that. Nothing
God.
Like that.
Yeah. I do love that film.
We do want to celebrate these films that do affirm different types of bodies and that have title characters, protagonists, lead characters who don't look the way that Hollywood tells us so often that we need to be. So if you know of a film, if there's a film that you think is particularly poignant in this respect, do message in. The number is 0427JOY949. We do want to hear from you. Mm. Coming up after this, we are going to be spotlighting some other films that do a really great job of celebrating bodies of all shapes and sizes. And we're also going to be speaking with Kelly Jean Drinkwater, who is the director of a new documentary that's screening as part of Queer Screen Film Fest. The documentary is Nothing to Blues, and it chronicles a really important production that took place about 3 years ago that sought to give choreographic language to larger bodies, because the truth is that as much as we don't see larger bodies on screen, we also don't see them on stage.
And they're also queer bodies as well. Larger queer bodies. So, double whammy for us.
More coming up on Outtakes right after this.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are celebrating films that are fat and fabulous. This is Tiffany Taylor with Here's Where I Stand, which is, I think, probably the best track, or one of the best tracks anyway, in the 2003 American musical comedy drama film, camp. It's written by Todd Graff and directed by Todd Graff, and it's based on his experiences at a New York performing arts summer camp. And I think it's a really sweet film.
Yeah, Daniel, I'm beginning to think this is probably one of your all-time top films, up there with The Hours and Angels in America.
You did roll your eyes when I said I wanted to play this song.
Play camp. Yeah, I'm beginning to think, this is probably on high rotation.
I found it really meaningful when I was introduced to it when I was but a wee teenager.
Mm.
I really enjoyed it.
Nothing to do with the blonde boy crush that you had.
Who gets his gear off towards the end of the film.
It had nothing to do with that, did it?
Would we call him a blonde?
I would.
Sandy kind of blonde hair. Mm. OCD. But
I think what's telling about this film, there's one character who's introduced to us by her parents saying that, they had to wire her mouth shut because she was putting on weight and that she was too big. I mean, now the thing is this is a girl, a young teenager, who is probably carrying just a couple of extra kilos, not many, not much.
You wouldn't think anything of her.
And yet it's at that age when kids can be so sensitive to any sort of criticism that can potentially go on to lead towards eating disorders in later life. Mm. So, this kind of body shaming and fat shaming at that sort of age can have profound impact on someone's life throughout their... Yeah.
Well, there's a spoiler alert here, but what's so wonderful about the film is that, I mean, this is really the only time we hear from her. The film spotlights a number of different soirees, performances, and the lead actress who's supposed to sing this song has a punch-on with another character and neither of them can go on stage, so they take off this character's wire
jaw.
She belts out this song. And then the parents are there sitting in the audience. Thinking, how beautiful are we? We accept her now.
She can sing. We can make money off her.
But I
poor kid's going to end up.
This is in the broader context of a film which really celebrates difference. I think
diversity.
Yeah. It does celebrate diversity. People of different colours, people of different races, people of different sizes,
sexualities,
genders, drag queens. Mm. I mean, it's
PG-13. I thought it was a mistake when I was re-watching it. Going, no, really, they got away with that being a PG-13 film. Happy to know that, but I was very surprised.
But I have to say, I have to be honest right now, and I don't think that this film is actually fat affirming. I don't think this is actually fat positive.
Don't you?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Well, because the only character who is supposedly fat, and I am using air commas, isn't fat, and she doesn't talk at all throughout the film until the last moment.
I do think the blonde character, the who has a crush on the title character played by Daniel Letterly. I don't
know. Your crush?
No. I don't know the name of this character, but she's she doesn't look like the kind of Hollywood lead actress either, does she? And neither does Michael, the other male protagonist in this film. I mean, yes, they might not be like very overweight, but this is a film comprised of characters who do not look like the people that we usually see on the screen. They are different shapes, colours, sizes, and that's what is affirming. It's not always a direct plot point, but it is just the kind of broader way. It's the way that the film is made.
Yep.
And when we were off air, I was mentioning Little Miss Sunshine, which we all kind of forget sometimes. But Little Miss Sunshine, the character of Olive, who we just recently saw in the Freak Show,
Oh,
as the antagonist.
God. Did she just became evil?
Oh,
didn't
God,
she?
She's
definitely
evil
not
now.
Little Miss Sunshine. That was.
But
evil.
In that film, I mean, little Olive is made to feel, don't eat the ice cream, Olive, if you want to be one of those kind of. What
pretty
are those
pageant
pretty pageant girls? Yeah. Mm. And the saddest part of the film is later on in the film, just before she goes on stage, where she starts to judge her own appearance, where she looks at herself in the mirror, comparing herself to the other little perfect girls, sucks in her tummy for the first time ever in the film, yet still goes on stage and owns it, like, not pageant style, but everyone else is. We're all cheering for her, knowing at that moment she's got that self-doubt looking at the world around her.
That's right. But
God
she had
bless.
That. But you know what? She still stood up and did her thing.
And was like never allowed to be in a pageant ever again.
And just
in a number of ways.
Poked everyone in the eye and said, there you go.
That's precisely what Nothing to Lose is about. This really important new documentary from Kelly Jean Drinkwater. It is about larger people owning their bodies on stage. Mm. So this is a documentary which is screening as part of the upcoming Queer Screen Film Fest, which kicks off up in Sydney next month. And the Queer Screen Film Fest has announced three of the films which will be showing as part of the festival. And one of those films is Nothing to Lose, which chronicles the creation of Force Majeure's hit production of the same name, which showed a number of festivals around Australia back in 2015. And what it did was sought to give what it calls a choreographic language to larger people's bodies, because the truth is we very rarely see larger people on our screens, let alone our stages. And when we do, then they're not
definitely,
dancing.
Definitely not in dance, yeah.
And right. That's what inspired this show to actually to actually come to life, because they hadn't seen anyone, and that's why they did the call out.
And in fact, this is the first, at that time, it was the one and only ever production in the world to feature fat bodies on stage. And in fact, these people are also most of the performers identified as LGBTI as well.
And actually, I did, one of the moments I loved in the documentary was when we're watching the world's reaction to this show coming to stage. I mean, literally, I remember going, oh my God, they just spoke Greek. You know, literally they were being covered by every media outlet because they had sold out shows, I think, in Sydney and Melbourne. Like, it started in Sydney was where they had the main shows, but then watching the worldwide reaction.
Do you think that was a positive reaction, or do you think there was a little bit of, I mean,
bit of both,
bit of freak show about it? Is that what that was? It was like, what?
But it was great to watch. But it was great watching all those different media outlets, especially the American ones, felt like it was a bit of a
freak show. It was kind of like, oh, here, check this out, you know, and without really being terribly genuine and supportive of what this performance was really about.
Yeah.
Mm. Now, the film is directed by Kelly Jean Drinkwater, who is a filmmaker and an artist and an activist, but who is also recognised internationally for her voice in radical body politics. Mm-hmm. So we're chatting with Kelly Jean Drinkwater this evening about her politics and what it is she advocates for. But we're also chatting about the representation of larger people in film and, of course, her new documentary, Nothing to Lose. So our chat with Kelly Jean Drinkwater is coming up on Outtakes right after this.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are celebrating films that are fat and fabulous. And one of those films is the really important, I think, new documentary from Kelly Jean Drinkwater, Nothing to Lose, which is screening as part of the Queer Screen Film Fest next month up in Sydney. And this documentary charts the production of a similarly titled stage show that sought to give choreographic language to larger people's bodies. And the documentary takes us backstage, behind scenes, and introduces us to the different people who are dancing on stage and their experiences with things like fat shaming.
But it charts the entire process from the auditions to the creative process to all those kind of rehearsals and takes us in. I love the moments when we started to get to know the characters one-on-one.
Me too. I think that
was probably one of my favourite things, learning a little bit about their heritage and their culture and where they've come from and why they're loving dance. You know, an industry that kind of excludes them, but why they've embraced it and how they've kind of come to this production, which kind of helps, you know, set the tone for what they're going to bring to the show and how they're going to define their character that they're performing to. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, definitely from the idea of understanding who the characters were. And I have to say that these people really portrayed themselves as real go-getters, you know. They were definitely had a lot of chutzpah about them, really. And I think this is probably something that you wouldn't see with a lot of fat people. No. They'd probably feel very insecure and not have a lot of confidence. So, excuse me, but, you know, to sort of see these people who are very strong and confident, who stand up for themselves and learn more of their story.
Was it the Tongan woman who's like, I'm usually, you know, this is like quite comfortable for me. Like this, you know, that was really, and she's like, I'm the, what was the phrase she described? The runt of the litter. Like she kind of described herself amongst the group. She's like, I'm not used obsessed with it. Like that, love watching those kind of different cultural representations of body and size. And
see, this is the thing. She comes from Tonga, where a large woman is very attractive and of high status and high worth. And so she's kind of caught between this cultural limbo with her Tongan ancestry and her Australian
and the Western
reality.
white reality.
Now, Kelly Jean Drinkwater is the director of this new documentary. I sat down with Kelly Jean, and before we had a chat about the film, I wanted to pick her brain about her unique brand of radical body politics, because she does a lot to advocate for the inclusion of different body shapes within society. I mean, at the end of the day, that's really what she's advocating for. Mm-hmm. This is part of my chat with director Kelly Jean Drinkwater. I thought perhaps to begin, if you could let us know a little bit about what is meant by radical body politics and what it is you advocate for.
It's about large bodies, and it's about challenging why we have such an incredibly overwhelming negative perception of fat people. And I mean, that doesn't just affect fat people, it affects a lot of different marginalized bodies, people of different genders, people who are different abilities, different ages even. Looking to have a conversation and a dialogue around people who don't sort of live in these normative bodies. Radical body politics is kind of a way of describing the dialogue or the intersections of marginalised bodies and what that means.
It's interesting because we deal with queer politics quite a bit on Outtakes, and it seems to me that the two kind of bodies of theory have quite a bit in common because they're both critiquing mainstream society from the margins.
Absolutely, and I think there is a lot of intersection with queer conversations around bodies and politics in general and identity politics as well. Queer in terms of a kind of political identity tends to be one that is looking deeper into sort of society's understanding of otherness. And I think that because I've kind of grew up in a queer community, that really kind of led for an easier dismantling of this idea of sort of body shame and, sexuality and different kind of fears around fat bodies that I was able to kind of dissect.
I wondered if maybe you could unpack what you mean when you talk about the way that quote-unquote fat is dealt with in society.
For me, you know, like as I've grown along this journey of this kind of understanding of my fat, queer fat body, I've kind of come across a lot of different ideas and concepts and thinking about all of this. And what I've come to realise is that a lot of what we project onto other people about their bodies, regardless what if it's size or skin colour or gender or, you know, any of these kind of differentiating factors, is quite often that kind of negative projection is usually coming from a place of self-loathing about our own selves. And it's a projection. And the way that we kind of, and this is such a systemic kind of issue, that it kind of sold to us in this kind of capitalist construct around these ideas of being of perfection and what's okay and how to achieve that and what's not okay. And then that kind of filters down through our media messages. And then that sends, and then we were, you know, a little chubby 10-year-old kid understanding that, you know, being fat is not okay and it's the worst thing you could possibly be, especially if you're a woman. And then we internalise all of that. And what happens is if you are those things, it starts this kind of feed of self-loathing. But also if you don't identify or if you aren't a fat person or a bigger person or a person of difference, say, the fear of becoming those things can be a catalyst to perpetuate this kind of body shaming.
Imbricated in all of those constructs that you're referring to is, of course, cinema which we deal with every week here. We talk about the importance of representation, but, you know, cinema has a lot to answer for in terms of perpetuating ideas about the way people look and different bodies.
Of course, that has a lot to answer for. I mean, being reflected in popular culture is something that is an incredibly affirming thing, and it normalizes realities and societies. It also gives preference to those kind of realities and what stories get told and how those stories get told and what is considered interesting and valid. So, you know, it is one of those really powerful mediums that we're exposed to at an incredibly young age. And, you know, if you think about, I don't know if you relate to, you know, when you've been a little queer kid, and if you think about who that, what that looked like when you were growing up and how you saw yourself reflected back towards you from the screen, it can be like nothing, like there would just be nothing reflected back to you.
Kelly Jean Drinkwater there, the director of Nothing to Lose, which screens next month as part of the Queer Screen Film Fest. And, of course, Nothing to Lose deals with the representation of larger bodies. And we know that representation matters.
It's quite funny looking, because we're talking about kids' films, we're even talking about camp, which is PG-13, and the representations that we're giving to our young selves and our younger selves as we're growing up. I mean, I'm extra mindful of this now because I'm raising a little girl. And it's funny, the conversation came up over the weekend. Someone was like, oh, you should sign her when she's ready, sign her up for dance and gymnastics. I reacted immediately to that as a negative because I don't see that as healthy body images. I see that
Did you see that as gender profiling?
I said, one, of
gender
course.
Bias. It's like, but oh, my God, you're pushing her into these gender roles already. Come
my
on.
My house is full of pink. Oi. but even like looking at things at Centre Stage and all these kind of, but even the TV shows.
Centre Stage is actually a really good example of a film that deals with body image in what turns out to be quite a positive way, I think. I mean, there's a question with films like Centre Stage of the means versus the ends, you know. Is it worth the means when you get to the ends, if the ends is positive but the means is not? I think Centre Stage is actually a film that deals really
one
well
with
some of
the that does it
issues.
Really well.
But they don't really talk. I mean, there's no fat people in Centre Stage. We've got eating disorder. We have an eating disorder. That's it.
But she stops to take care of herself.
Yes. She does. She does. But if we're going to talk about a program, I know this is not film, Daniel, but there is a great film.
Here we go.
There's a great program. I know I think it's great
free
family viewing. It's called This Is Us. It's an American program. And the three main characters, they're triplets. And one of them is this woman who is...
And the other is this super muscular... heartthrob.
I know it is very, very dichotomous, but we have representation here of a fat woman and her partner, and it's a very positive representation. I think you really get to see what her struggle is like, what her day to day is like, and you actually get to see what it feels like to be inside a fat
look,
person.
I can't argue that This Is Us does positive things in terms of representing different types of bodies. It deals with representation of different race identities as
That's
well.
That's right. We've got race, we've got sexuality, we've got
but I guess
body image.
The body image stuff and when the tropes we were all talking about before, what I am tired of seeing is when they're not made a joke, so when they're not comedy tropes, must they always be
tragic.
Self-deprecating, tragic, on a diet and dealing with stuff?
Thank
it's
you.
That.
And
they can have
us.
The other stories that everyone else has that we all live in our day-to-day life. I just don't want to see those stories attached. But it has to start somewhere,
But Gina, it wouldn't be real if you didn't portray that. I mean, after all, fat shaming in society is acceptable at the moment. It's still acceptable. It doesn't have the same...
That's where Nothing to Lose is a bit different.
It doesn't have the... Yeah, so it doesn't really have the same. You can freely come out and make fat jokes.
Yeah.
And ageist jokes, but you can't freely come out and make queer jokes. You can't.
But this
or
is
racist
us.
Jokes.
This
but,
is us.
But these. But so what I'm saying is like fat people are still very much.
It's still an acceptable shame, isn't it?
It is. And so you have to portray that. You have to portray that. Otherwise, it's not a very accurate representation.
But we talk about
of how their
we
life
talk about
is being
dynamic
lived.
Representation. We talk about three-dimensional representation. This Is Us is none of that. This Is Us is just is.
I think you just if case is closed. You have just emphasized my point for me. Thanks, Daniel.
You know what? This Is Us feels constructed. It's
paint by numbers, and it's not melodrama. Genuine.
It's not authentic representation. It's not nuanced representation. I mean, yes, it deals with the pitfalls of being overweight, and yes, it's wonderful to see an overweight character on our screens. We need more of them.
Yep.
But this is not the representation that I am willing to settle for.
Okay, fantastic. But I don't think you're the target market for this. No,
I think this is a bigger conversation of one person's hates. This has got nothing to do with the representation of who was seen on screen. You just hate that show and you love that show. And let's part.
We
love it though.
We are looking at films this evening that are fat and fabulous and a few TV shows which neither of
we'll
those
We'll do
things.
TV another night when he's away.
Yeah, we'll do that, yes.
And we'll go Netflix. I want to do that. Yeah, Netflix one you just talked about.
Yeah, can we feature This Is Us though? Can we do that?
I'll give you space. I'll have to watch it though.
Okay.
More coming up with director Kelly Jean Drinkwater, the director of this really important and far more nuanced documentary than something like This Is Us. More with Kelly Jean Drinkwater right after this.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ Community Radio Station, Joy 94.9.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are spotlighting and celebrating films that are fat and fabulous. And one of those films, a really important documentary, is the new documentary Nothing to Lose by Kelly Jean Drinkwater. We are speaking with Kelly Jean about the new documentary. And this is what Kelly Jean had to say about the documentary itself.
So I was involved with Force Majeure and Kate Champion, who Force Majeure is the dance company that started the show, and I was the artistic associate on the show with Kate Champion, and I worked with her and we created this dance movement work, this dance theatre piece, where the cast were all fat and we were exploring, you know, the movement potential and the kind of realities of living in fat bodies and how that kind of is represented on stage, on theatre. And being a filmmaker, I remember when Kate asked me to work with her on the live show, she said to me, well, you're going to want to make a film about it too, aren't you? And I said, yes, of course I am.
Yeah.
And so, and of course I thought, well, yes, this is a very interesting thing to be documenting from an outside perspective as well, because it had never been done before. And the very idea that this very well-known, very respected choreographer was willing to go there and to sort of deconstruct, or not deconstruct, sort of investigate why we have such issues with bigger bodies, why we never don't really see them on stage, why we definitely don't see them moving on stage, and why that is. That in itself was a really fascinating kind of idea.
I got the sense that it was transformative for a lot of people who took part in it. There was one fellow, for instance, who was kind of praising having discovered what he called a quote-unquote choreographic language for his own body, and he was talking about, you know, how important that was. Why do you think it's so important?
One of the sort of early questions or the misconceptions about what the dance show was intending to be was that people were going to see, you know, really fat people jetting across the stage and, like, you know, walking on the walls and lifting each other up and doing, like, you know, standard ballet or like contemporary dance style movement, but just fat people doing it. And one of the wonderful things that I really loved about Kate's approach and why I worked with her on it is she was completely disinterested in doing that, because she didn't want to see fat people doing a movement that was not of and from their bodies. So that's her approach. So it was a very workshop-based, task-based approach with Kate. Her and I would work together to come up with sort of concepts that we thought would be interesting for these guys to explore, and a lot of that was around, you know, working with the part of your body that you felt the least comfortable with, or trying to use your flesh as a tool, as its own, you know, like, what does fat do when it moves? Not your body, but actual flesh. You know, how can we do that? So it wasn't really about kind of this idea of
mirroring kind of quote-unquote beauty in movement.
Well, I think it was you in the doco that said it was about getting rid of judgments and seeing what can happen when you just be in your body.
Well, that's right. I mean, it takes a lot of unpacking to just be able to be in your body, you know?
Of course.
This isn't exclusive to fat bodies either. I mean, I think anyone, you know, we all carry around this kind of idea of who we are, this kind of external idea of what we look like and how we move through the world.
Absolutely.
But the difference with bigger bodies, I think, is that a lot of that kind of other people's ideas of what we look like or how we should be are projected onto us quite freely. And so we have this kind of constant absorption of other people's bullshit around our bodies.
Yes.
I know for me personally, having to sort of have a barrier around that and just investigate what I feel about my own body and how I feel in my flesh and what, you know, that means for me was incredibly hard. It's kind of like, you know, learning to meditate and you have to just turn all the other thoughts off. It's quite an intense thing to do. I think what it is like we're often so judged around what we can and can't do or what we can achieve physically.
Yes.
Or even things like owning our own sexuality or our sensuality, that's taboo and that's controversial. You know, all of those things, a lot of the characters in the show are incredibly sexy human beings that really, really own their sexuality, their queer sexuality, and that comes across.
I wonder if there are any films that you think are particularly progressive in terms of dealing with body and different bodies. Are there any go-to films that come to your mind that you think that you would encourage people to see?
Oh, my God. I would have researched that. I'm trying to think. I just think of what were really influential to me, right, when I was, like, a teenager. And that was, of course, the original Hairspray. Hairspray with Ricky Lake when she was fat, because she was fat, big, blonde and beautiful, and she got the gorgeous guy and she was the best dancer and she got to wear a cockroach dress. So
I love that answer. I love that answer.
But it's really old, and then they did a remake and it was like John Travolta in a goddamn fat suit being divine, and it was horrible and it was just all a bit wrong. But, you know. And then things like Sweetie, which was one of Jane Campion's early movies. And there was a movie that I saw once on SBS when SBS used to show, like, amazing, independent, interesting foreign movies. And it was called Sugar Baby, and I don't know anything about it, but I saw it when I was 14, and the woman in that, she was, like, this fat woman that had, like, this amazing sex life, and she was called Sugar Baby. And I just remember that was really, like, influential. And I guess it just comes back to this idea of all these projections, all these ideas of self that you see reflected back that aren't just all negative. I think that's the ones that had the impact on me. But I didn't really answer your question.
No, that's a great answer. I haven't heard of Sugar Baby. I've just looked it up. A plump Munich mortuary worker tracks down and seduces a married subway conductor.
How did you do that? I've been looking that. Yeah, I didn't remember she was a mortuary worker that seduced a married man.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are celebrating films that are fat and fabulous. That was our chat with Kelly Jean Drinkwater, who is the director of Nothing to Lose, which screens as part of the Queer Screen Film Fest next month. But of course, we did ask Kelly Jean what films she thinks does a really good job of representing different types of body, and her go-to film is Hairspray. This is the 1988 American dance comedy film written and directed by John Waters, starring Ricky Lake, Divine, Debbie Harry, Sonny Bono and Jerry Stiller. It is, of course, now canonical and probably the most accessible of John Waters' films.
That and Crybaby. Crybaby doesn't get as much attention as
you don't
it should.
Think.
It should.
Well, I have to say, I struggle with this film, Hairspray.
Really?
Yeah. Why? I think because I was first introduced to it after the 2016 remake.
Oh, the fat suit, John Travolta. You know the one I'm trying to say.
There you go.
Really?
Seriously, why couldn't they not have found a fat drag queen to do that? Seriously.
Divine's yeah, I know. That was really badly cast in my opinion. It just kind of lost. Lost all its respect.
And credibility.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Hairspray opened in February 1988 and it grossed just under about half a million dollars. So it wasn't a commercial success, but it certainly has become canonical. In mid 2002, it was turned into a Broadway musical. And then, of course, in 2007, I said 2016 before, in 2007, it was a remake was directed by Adam Shenkman with, of course, Nikki Blonsky, Michelle Pfeiffer, Christopher Walken, Amanda Bynes. And then 2016 was the television adaptation in America with Ariana Grande, I think.
So it's really 11 years since the remake with Michelle Pfeiffer.
It is 11 years now.
Mm. But hey, in the original Hairspray, 1988, Sonny Bono,
Deborah Harry. Ricky Lake.
I would say it's a miracle that she got any acting work
Divine.
She got her own talk show actually after this. Yeah.
I mean, these names just hitting you as the credits are coming in. Boom, boom, boom. And do you know what? I think it really does a great job in affirming fat people. I think what you see here is you see Tracy Turnblad, who is the main character in this film, and you know, Divine is probably the supporting lead. You know, Tracy is fat, but that's not holding her back. I mean, she's out there, she's getting on this dance program, she's finding the boy, she's getting the endorsement deals, and she's out there living her life. I mean, you know, being fat is not holding her back.
She's the better dancer. That's why she's there. That's why she's on stage.
That's right. Exactly. But, I mean, you know, she's got the confidence to get up and do that, and she's not being held back.
Yeah. It was too vanilla than the other version. It was for a very mainstream audience.
Who?
Yeah.
Which one? The 2007 version? Yeah. It's too mainstream?
Oh. Who's that guy that's in all the – what's his name?
Which one?
Zac
Efron.
That one. Oh, there you go. Okay. The minute you throw Zac Efron in it, you know it's High School Musical audience kind of thing.
Okay.
Yeah, no. Okay. It doesn't hold its weight. Mind you, you know, Pink Flamingos as well. Just – Hello,
but although I think what was also interesting in this film too was the race relations that came out. Yeah. I know this is not so much about fat politics or fat phobia or fat shaming, but I think what was interesting here is that discussion around race and segregation and integration and there's the one scene there where John Waters, the director, appears as a psychiatrist with a trying to hypnotize one of the characters and put her into a straitjacket. Because her parents were afraid that she was going to hook up with a black man.
Can I say, poo-poo the 2007 adaptation, the 1988 musical grossed just over $500,000. The 2007 musical became...
Film.
The musical film.
Production.
Yes.
Okay, yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Became the only the third movie ever, third musical movie ever to cross the $200 million mark internationally, behind only Greece and Chicago. So,
but that was on the back of the original 1988.
No, I don't think so. I don't
definitely.
No, no,
it without the fame, without that fame, it would not have got
there.
And
I think by then John Waters had that cult following, so people were curious and attracted. I mean, they'd seen his other works.
Mm.
People were. I think it kind of had that brand to it.
Mm. Well, I mean, they're very different movies. They're almost incomparable, really. Yeah. I mean, one is a fun farce, and one is a kind of satire, really.
Mm.
So on that note, that's really all that we have time for. That's it for another week of Outtakes.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.